Welcome to the Social Innovation Podcast. We give you insights into what is happening at the forefront of social innovation and guide you through the challenges and opportunities faced every day by the entrepreneurs and innovators pushing the field forward. I'm your host, Henrik Stormdursen, and I'll be speaking with entrepreneurs, investors, and innovators to get the behind-the-scenes perspectives on social innovation. This podcast is sponsored this season by Lexell Social Ventures, Sweden's first impact investment firm and welfare innovators of the year 2016. Follow them and us at LexellSocialVentures.com, SocialInnovationPodcast.net, at Medium, Facebook, and Instagram. Today, I'm speaking with Andreas Koenig, CEO of Just Arrived, helping people get into the labor market. Welcome, Andreas.
Thank you very much.
Pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you. Pleasure being here.
All right. So in your words, who are you and what do you do?
First of all, I'm the one of the founders and also the CEO of Just Arrived, and now it is also Just Tech. Two companies that are focusing on getting foreign-born persons into the labor market in Sweden specifically. I would describe myself as an entrepreneur that gets things done, very curious as a person.
How did you happen to get into the topic of integration or labor market integration for migrants?
I think it goes all the way back to me growing up. Throughout my childhood and my teenage years, I've always been engaged in different voluntary initiatives, being a camp leader or being a leader of a children's choir, for example. It goes all the way there. So I think that I've been used to working voluntarily, used to be working with others, used to help others, and I think that's done something to my DNA as an entrepreneur. And when the summer of 2015 occurred in Sweden, where thousands and thousands of people were coming to Scandinavia, to Sweden, fleeing for their lives, coming from places like Syria and the Middle East, it was a very natural move, because what we did then was that we started a voluntary initiative that we called Just Right, where we engaged, after 10 months, we were 200 persons being engaged, building up a digital platform that would connect newcomers in Sweden with job opportunities.
So making money isn't good enough, being an entrepreneur?
It's not good enough, no. Can I just add to that? Because making money, I've been doing this now. I've been working as a social entrepreneur first year as a voluntary initiative, and since 2016 we've been a limited company. Making money is essential. It's so vital, and I think I've realized over the years that although I've already built into our vision, into our purpose, that we are a social company, I cannot put enough emphasis on the fact that you do need to make money.
So you guys got started around the migration wave of 2015. And how do you see the labor market and the chances, opportunities for people with the background that you're serving today? How do you look at integration in Sweden? What have you learned?
Sweden was, at the time, we were the nation per capita who took in the most asylum seekers that year. Only Germany beat us in terms of quantity. They took in a million, roughly. We took in 163,000. But when it comes to integration, statistics also show that even after 10 years, half of the foreign-born population cannot support themselves, don't have a job. And that is due to our welfare system not being designed for the volumes of people that actually came during that year. I think that's the main reason why.
There's no union for foreign-born migrants paving the way for good situations in the labor market.
Exactly. And in the unions in Sweden are very strong, and the unions do not care about their non-members. So that means that we also saw that many of the unions didn't even try to didn't even try to get more persons into the labor market. They would rather shut them out, which is, you're onto something really interesting there.
But you guys got started in 2015. So what have you learned since starting to work with this target group, starting to try to find jobs, match people to jobs? What have you learned, and what's grown in your appreciation of the challenge that you've been working with?
So we decided that we wanted to plug into the gig economy or the platform economy. So we wanted to utilize the benefits of the digitization that was occurring and still is, of course. That means that we wanted to mediate short gigs, short-term jobs to the foreign-born persons, because we thought that would lower the threshold for this target group, and that it would make it easier for an employer, for example, to take someone in. If it's only for 8 hours, why should I hesitate? It's not that much money. But we quickly realized that there were two immature parameters or factors in this equation. Our customers, HR managers throughout Sweden, and to some extent CEOs on small, medium enterprises, they were not inclined, they were not ready to buy services in such a way. They still wanted to have a phone call with someone, calling them and say, hey, Birgitta, it's time to make that order.
They didn't want to sit there and fiddle with an app on their phone.
No, exactly. So we wanted to plug into the gig economy. HR managers did not want to buy services in that way. Also, 8 hours were too little, because the other immature factor or parameter was our workers, our employees, the foreign-born persons. They were not plug-and-play to go into the Swedish labor market doing services, because one, they didn't know the language, and second of all, the cultural fit wasn't there. They were not accustomed to the ways, you know, the way we're working in Sweden, because it's not the same working in Sweden as working in Syria. They're different work cultures. So after a while, we realized this, and we decided to redesign the ways we were mediating jobs to newcomers.
Is that when we're coming to the pivot?
That's when we're coming to the pivot.
Right.
Yeah.
So how did you pivot?
So we got some really heavy, really good investors initially that believed in our cause, believed in our purpose, and that also believed in the opportunities that digitization brings with it. And what we did was that we focused on volume, up until the point in time where we realized, hey, we're not achieving value for anyone here. It looks good on the surface, but are we really helping the HR managers?
Can we dig into that slightly? So you're saying you have volume. Volumes of what?
Volumes of users.
People applying or people interested in hiring these, both?
People who seek job seekers.
Basically. Job seekers. Yeah. Okay, so lots and lots of job seekers.
Yes.
So that seems like, you know, decent reach. But what were you missing?
So I think that you also would agree that getting an 8-hour job doesn't add that much value. It's not enough to put a company's logotype on your resume.
Or food on the table, even.
Or food on the table, even. Exactly. It would be the same way for the employers, because it wouldn't. If you have a task, normally it takes more than 8 hours. So we decided to do a pivot. So instead of developing a digital platform, we decided that we should rather focus on quality. That we wanted to focus on long-term jobs rather than short-term jobs.
Employments of different lengths and...
Exactly. Yeah. And that would also mean that we would have to utilize the union agreements in the way we work, in the way we employ people, which was a huge difference from our first idea of creating and making, plugging into the gig economy.
And you became a staffing company.
We became a staffing company, exactly.
Right, so you kind of, not that staffing companies are overly popular in the Swedish labor market model either, but still, no. You're kind of assuming the guise, you're assuming the clothing of a relatively legitimate, regular labor market participant.
Yeah, exactly. And a funny fact, 22 years ago, staffing companies were forbidden in Sweden up until that point in time, Arbetsförmedlingen and the labor authority were having a monopoly in terms of mediating jobs.
The beautiful history of Swedish monopolies, state monopolies. No one could broker a job but the government.
Exactly, exactly. And then 22 years ago, the bemanningsföretag, the staffing companies, were allowed to operate in Sweden. Of course, the unions did not like this because that would mean that the permanent jobs that their members were having were threatened in a way. And I think it's also important to understand that we come from a tradition and a history in Sweden where the full-time employment is the sun in the universe around everything revolves. I think what we wanted to do with the gig economy was to actually challenge that view of thinking, because with digitization, there are so many interesting opportunities coming up.
Right. I mean, in economics, you would call that, you know, perhaps price discrimination or having the opportunity of mm-hmm. just different offers for different people so that there may be a better matching of needs, supply and demand.
Exactly.
We also know there's challenges on the labor market. So,
yes.
So we want people to have jobs. We want people to be able to support themselves, and standards are important in some regard.
Mm-hmm.
And there
mm-hmm.
are obstacles for
yeah.
certain people that other people don't have, and so forth.
Right, exactly.
So you do this pivot, you start realizing where there's both business and value for individuals and companies to be created.
Yeah.
So how do you put that together?
First of all, if we go back to Birgitta, the HR manager, she is very familiar with using staffing services. She knows the interface, she knows the union agreements, she knows everything. So suddenly when we said it, okay, and we're union agreements compatible, that would open up new doors, basically. So
you're checking an important box there for...
Exactly, very important box.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure if we would have been running Just Arrived in America, for example. I'm not sure that the history would have evolved in the same way. So I think that was a very important turning point for us, where the customers actually started buying our services and listening to us.
And you were speaking earlier about the hurdles, perhaps, that the job seekers would have in coming into a place of work and even getting the opportunity to participate in the labor market. So what did you do to help them get closer to employability and so forth?
That's a really good question. There are no natural venues where foreign-born persons and employers meet. So Swedes knows where to go and find jobs and et cetera. There's also, I'm not sure if this number is correct, but I think it implies something that 7 out of 10 jobs goes through the own network.
So even if you know where the jobs are listed, that's
exactly.
completely irrelevant, because people don't get jobs from applying to ads.
Exactly. Exactly. That's exactly what I'm saying. Second challenge is what I would call the information challenge, which is that there is no one in Sweden right now, or not in 2015 and not today, as far as I'm aware of, that takes a holistic responsibility for telling people how it is. Regarding work as an immigrant in Sweden. You can go to the labor authority and ask them. You can go to the migration authority and ask them. They would give you somewhat similar answers, but they are not speaking to each other, which creates a lot of confusion, of course.
And is this information about like the process of getting into the labor market? Is it about how it is to work in Sweden, or what employers expect from you, or all of the above?
I think that if you look at the challenge as a whole, I think it's there are formal challenges, bureaucratic challenges, of course.
Hoops to jump through, yeah.
Exactly. And I would also say that there is a cultural challenge where you get acquainted with and get to know the Swedish labor market and where you are being prepared before you actually start working. And that is something that we want to deal with at Just Arrived. That's how we prepare our employees, for example, giving them some cultural onboarding. And I think also last but not least, there is the challenge of validation, and not necessarily validating university scores or degrees, but actually going in and validate a person and say that, okay, I know what these logotypes mean. I understand what you did before. I think you would be a great fit for this company. The very few who actually go in and tries to validate and match foreign-born persons with job opportunities. And I think that's very much needed. And that's also why we are operating just right.
How much of a company and how much of a nonprofit are you?
Our first idea, because we started as a voluntary initiative with over 200 volunteers, we decided that we wanted, first of all, to be a foundation. We kind of quickly realized that if you want to, you know, start a company, eventually doing it as a foundation is not as simple as you think, or that we thought. So we chose to set up a limited company with the majority stakes in a foundation that we call Diversify Foundation.
Which is a surprisingly common model to solve to square the round hole, so to say. That it's called a hybrid organization where a nonprofit of some judicial character owns a limited company, or they work in some sort of parallel.
Right. I didn't know it was that common, but it shows that we were thinking the right way.
You are listening to the Social Innovation Podcast. I'm your host, Henrik Stormdursen, and I want to ask for your help. If you enjoy an episode of this podcast, please share it on social media like Facebook or LinkedIn. This is actually the primary way that others get to hear about the show. You, the listener, gets to decide who listens to these conversations. If everyone who liked any particular episode shared that episode, then we would grow our audience tremendously. I'm running this show to share the conversations that have helped me during my years as a social entrepreneur and an impact investor. Support me in that mission by sharing the conversations that are helpful to you. Now back to the show. So that's the legal aspect of it, but how much of a purpose-driven nonprofit mentality, if I can characterize it that way, and how much of a business mentality? Like when you walk into the office and you look at the culture and how people interact, and you know, is it a very business-minded organization, or is it, you know, a bunch of save the worlders running around working around the clock to save the people?
I think first of all, what we're doing is that we acknowledge and we utilize the mechanisms of market economy, so to say. Which
you work as a business.
We work as a business, exactly. And we want to take the best parts of market economy, because we believe that that's, you know, being a limited company is the best way of organizing ourselves in order to reach our purpose. Our purpose in this case is to actually get more foreign-born persons into the labor market in Sweden. And I think that the purpose is what sets us aside from other ordinary companies. Our purpose is not necessarily to make the most profit out of our work. Of course, we want to make profit. Of course, we want to be, you know,
to be able to grow,
successful.
To be economically sustainable.
Exactly. We want to expand, because when we expand, more persons are getting the opportunity to get into the labor market. So we're running as a business, but we believe that purpose and vision of Just Right is what guides us and shows us the direction.
Because if I can be cheeky and kind of give my two cents, I mean, walking into your office and meeting your colleagues and your team, I had the chance to do that once, and I got very much the feeling that it was a very business-minded organization, which was really impressive. Like, there was so much professional atmosphere, so much focus on, you know, like, the daily business, like what we need to do, what our clients need, you know, how do we square the processes, you know, knock them out of the park one by one. And that's not something that you see everywhere with social entrepreneurs and social businesses, this really strong business acumen. So that's cool. You know, like the salespeople that work with Just Arrive, they feel like salespeople, you know, that's very cool, and something that a lot of people have spoken about in this podcast is that working with a purpose just gives more motivation and more kind of beneficial context for employees to feel like they're a part of something important. It doesn't necessarily mean that you have to run around giving money to poor people on the street, as is what you're doing.
Right.
You can just use that as a little bit of extra fire to make, you know, to run down the sales calls list, you know, make sure you hit as many as you can that day. But what's your reflection there? Because I think you're impressively professional.
So what we did in our lingo and in our rhetorics, when we went out meeting different companies, potential customers, we said, please help this group of people. Please, please, you know, please help. Please, please, please. Which wasn't successful at all, because the only time when we would get someone into the labor market would be when, okay, well, we got this position where, you know, they could clean the office one night.
Someone's answering that, please, doing you a favor.
Exactly.
Doing them a favor.
Yeah. And you're not going to end up with the value creation, because I believe that integration, it's not only about getting a job, it's also about feeling that I add value to the context where I'm at, where I'm working.
Right.
And the other way around, that the workplace where I'm at also feels that this person is contributing. So when we changed our rhetorics from talking about please help and instead asked the market, dear market, what do you want? What are you looking for?
What can we help you with?
What can we help you with? And when we talked to Volvo, when we talked to Selby, when we talked to the over 250 paying customers that we've had over the years, they came in with different profiles, different demands. And what we would do then was to take that demand, go look in our database. It's almost 10,000 candidates now after 2.5 years. And we would search for that person. And that's when we started becoming successful.
And what happened when you brought that profile back to, say, Volvo or Selby, the client? What did they get surprised that you were doing it? Did they think that you were not going to, like, did they expect you to deliver? Were they surprised? Or, you know, was that just a match made in heaven and, like, let's do more business?
I would say that prejudices is our best friend and our worst enemy. Or our worst enemy, because we need to knock on the door to Volvo maybe a few times more than another company. But when they do open a door and we actually do get a sell, prejudices are our best friend, because we always over-deliver to their expectations, which is always super good. So 99 times out of 100, the companies are calling us saying, hey, we're so impressed. Wow.
That's great. That's fantastic.
Yeah. So, yes, we have a very business-oriented culture. I believe what I've seen is that it's the best way of achieving our purpose.
Because, I mean, the people could be inclined to moralize over that with the backdrop that social entrepreneurship, social innovation comes a lot founded from the nonprofit movement, where things like doing business, you know, might be shamed upon and so forth. But there's the interesting with this new social entrepreneurial movement, where you have a broader acceptance, openness, and even like seeing the value in that, especially if the business transaction that you're conducting is the same thing that creates the value that you want to create for the target group, then you reduce the tension between running a business, making money, and doing good to a minimum, right?
Yeah.
Whereas if you're making money somewhere, you know, down the left, and you're helping someone down the right, it's easier that it might develop tensions between the priorities. Suddenly you're making lots of money down one corner, and you have to start thinking, how much of that money should I spend on those people that we were saying we were going to help? Yeah. You know, and then you start having challenges. So it's cool to see that, you know, you guys are running this as a professional business. And with every transaction you do, you help someone who has, you know, is getting some serious value and stronger connection to the labor market, and also really bridging the access from employers to this target group that they are much less familiar to work with. And
right. You're onto something here. If I can ask a question to you, what's a social enterprise?
Right.
there are some good thoughts on that.
Yeah.
I know. Right now we're sitting at Norrsken in Stockholm, and they are super devoted to social investments, impact investments, and so on. But what is a social enterprise? Whilst at the same time, I need to build up a business who are following our purpose, I also need to realize where the boundaries are.
Yeah. From an impact investment perspective, we often illustrate it as a spectrum where there's social on the one end and there's commercial on the other end. And both the investors and the investees, the entrepreneurs, can position themselves on that spectrum. So you have foundations and nonprofit on one end, and you have, you know, cutthroat businesses and you know, like high-end venture capital, commercial investment on the other. But in the middle, you start getting all kinds of mixes between, you know, you start edging to, you know, maybe into CSR or responsible investing, you know, and from the other end, you start edging from taking grants and giving grants to maybe selling some services because you have expertise, and maybe paying a little bit more for the value being created by a nonprofit. And in the middle there somewhere is the holy grail of, you know, building a serious business out of something that by definition creates just lots of good.
Exactly. And I think it's I like the picture, seeing it as a spectrum. And I think that we need to find our position whilst at the same time building our business. I think being in the middle is, there are not too many social enterprises there. There are not too many big giants to look up to take, you know, inspiration from. So I think that we're innovating as we go.
That's a really good point. I mean, there's no social unicorns yet. No one's seen one. You know, we can imagine them. But there's also the, you can also ask the question in a way, you know, if it, you know, let's try, for God's sakes, let's try. But it's not given that it's easy or even simple. Even if you find the middle point, you know, maybe it's something that you pass at speed, heading one direction. And the biggest argument against that I've seen is the fact that when you start making lots of money on something, then priorities start becoming real, and you're going to start, you know, as in any company, you know, figuring out, you know, there's lots of talk today about things like transparency or corruption and all these kinds of things that are in, you know, for many international businesses, they shouldn't have much interest in corruption unless the only market to exploit is some super corrupt country in some faraway place. But, you know, they always juggle with different values. You can take something as simple as the value of the staff and the value of the business and the incoming money. Mm. You know, you can maybe accept high turnover in staff if you continue to make, you know, bucket loads of money. But at some point, you might realize that we're not going to be able to hire as good people to generate all that money if we don't treat them well.
Right.
And then you end up in a question where, you know, it'll be about the board, it'll be about the management, it'll be about the culture. Like, how do you make your decisions? How do you make priorities? Do people understand that? Can everyone support that? Mm. And, you know, to demand that out of social enterprises, to find that middle spot and be perfectionist in executing on these tensions when, you know, most of business life is terrible at it. That's a high demand. But on the other hand, if anyone's going to discover how you do that, you could hope that social enterprises have a good chance.
Yeah, absolutely. And speaking of priorities, I think if we go back to the spectrum, and if we look at Amnesty, UNHCR, and those organizations, I think when we as a business start talking about purpose, people are immediately going to think, okay, so the immigration crisis in Sweden, right. So you're helping everyone, right? Because that's how huge the problem is. All of the foreign one, and what we, because we're a business, we need to focus. And I think that's a very common perception that if you're working as a social enterprise, you should focus on everything. Because otherwise, you're not as...
If you're even going to nibble on taking responsibility for the problem, you should take responsibility for the
for
problem.
Everything. Exactly.
So what would you hope... So with you guys are running an interesting, successful business today. And are you in the black? Are you in the red? Are you guys making money?
Soon.
Just making control question. You're on the way of becoming a very successful business. You have a functional business model, and you found an interesting market that you're working with. Beyond what you are looking to develop into, and you have other projects going on as well, but taking that to the side for a moment, what would you wish for in the market? What would you wish that others that might be curious on this field of work, looking at labor market integration, like what new ideas are needed? What problems need to be solved beyond what you guys are working on?
I think that we need to find, and I think there are a lot of good initiatives already that are working with diminishing or trying to delete biases. We need to realize, even though I'm working with foreign-born persons, I still have my prejudices. I'm still biased.
And is this in recruitment situations? Is it in the workplace?
I think both. And I think, you know, our customers, many times when they say, yes, we're signing this deal, is because they feel like they need to challenge their own prejudices.
So they can see a value in getting the resource and a value in supporting this particular kind of resource.
Exactly.
Getting someone in the door that challenges you a bit.
Yeah. So what we sell to our customers is two things. There's the business benefit of getting someone to help you with the need you have. And it's the social benefit. Only by taking in one of our consultants, you're also helping to solve a very big issue here. And that ticks two boxes that most of the HR managers.
But what you're alluding to here is really interesting, because you're saying that there's also something deeper. So beyond that transaction, beyond that person being engaged, there's the challenge of, okay, so what actually happens to biases? What happens to integration in the workplace? Mm-hmm. And that is something that is continuously a challenge in many places.
Yeah. Absolutely, and it's a challenge when we try to reach customers, as I said before, and I think that we need to find ways of continue digging into HR tech, for example, to develop great tools that look to competence, that can evaluate soft skills, so that we can...
This kind of algorithmic non-biases.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And I think that we will see, or I know, within the near future, we will see a lot of these tools. It's already on the way. And I think it's very exciting. And I hope that there won't be a need for Just Arrived in the future.
But that's interesting. So there's definitely development in that space, right? I mean, we see some initiatives both here in Sweden and internationally working on AI for non-biased recruitment and exciting stuff like that. But it does sound like there's a call to action here in terms of how do you help an organization's culture to adapt to changing with or changing their biases when they start growing a more diverse labor force?
Right. And change management is always hard. There are no rights or wrongs here. But I think the first step, I guess, is to be aware of that you're being biased and then act upon that.
Are there any other suggestions you would give to entrepreneurs that are curious about getting into integration, that feel like this is a space that I'm passionate about, you know, or getting into the labor market, solving labor market problems?
Yeah, definitely. So I think one of the secrets, if I should share that on this podcast, we actually avoided mission creep. And I think that's been the secret. That's been the very important factor for our growth and our success.
And mission creep, mission drift is something that's a familiar notion in the sector, where you set a purpose to an organization and then you start running an operation. Maybe different sort of forces start pushing you away from that original purpose, or
exactly,
articulating it in a way that is unintended.
Yeah.
So how did you avoid mission drift, mission creep?
By saying no.
And what did it look like? In what situation? What question were you posed? Or, you know, take us into the room.
Yeah, so if we go back to what I claimed earlier, that when you work with purpose, people around you think that you should be working with the whole issue of integration, for example. So when we started and we said, hey, we want to give newcomers in Sweden job, we want to connect them with job opportunities in Sweden. People would come up to us and say, hey, but you need to, you also need to, if you're going to be successful, you need to provide Swedish lessons. And also you should have coaching. And by the way, you should also have mentoring. And you should have.
Andreas, thank you for being on the podcast.
Thank you very much.
Hugo Morris, Lexell Social Ventures. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much, Henrik.
So you've actually invested in Just Arrived.
We have indeed. We have indeed. And not only have we invested in Just Arrived, but we're now also a member of the board, which is really exciting.
You're sitting on the board.
I'm sitting on the board myself. I am.
And what's the point of view on Just Arrived? What's the play for LSV?
I think from start, Just Arrived, together with a couple of other actors, are really interesting to LSV from the point of view that they're breaking through the norm or the paradigm that integration, especially into the labor market, is something that is to be done by government and government agencies. And I think we've seen especially since 2015, that's not really working. So coming up with innovative ways to dealing with that is really interesting.
And Just Arrived, how does that position from a portfolio perspective for you guys?
I think Just Arrived for us from a portfolio perspective is our first step in terms of building a bigger portfolio around the topic of integration. So I think when we look at integration, it's not a topic that's going to be solved by one specific company itself, but rather we need to look at a wider, integration supply chain system, right? Where we need to find different actors that can work with different aspects of the integration process. And I think Just Arrived is doing great work around matching people looking for work and employers on the Swedish job market.
So Just Arrived had a bit of a peculiar, interesting story where it starts out as very much a tech play and then gravitates towards something less tech-based. What's your thoughts on that?
I mean, I'm not really surprised by the fact that today Just Arrived is not dominated by tech. Rather, I think it makes sense. Their service is really about providing, identifying and then solidifying a connection between people who have skill sets and are looking for work and employers out in society. And I think tech is obviously going to play a role in that, but it's never going to be the core aspect. And I think we can see that in their second initiative, Just Tech, which is about providing foreign tech competency for Swedish companies. And even that, if you look into it, is more about matching people than really a tech function.
So where do you see the role for and the challenges perhaps of tech when it comes to labor market integration?
I think we've seen in the past where the Swedish National Labour Agency has tried to launch specific tech initiatives in order to solve especially this crisis, and it hasn't really worked. It hasn't really gotten down to the fundamental and perhaps human complex behaviours and problems behind the challenge that we're facing. So I think sometimes tech can create a false facade of pretending that we have a solution for a problem that we don't. So what Just Arrived is doing so great, I think, is that they're sort of putting the tech to the side and they're looking at the primary problem instead. And then perhaps using tech to leverage that, but it's not the first point of call.
Of course, the public authorities have some degree of responsibility when it comes to these kinds of large social problems, and they have active policy agendas and activities out there in the market. What's your reflection on what it means to try and be entrepreneurial in that space?
I think if you're an entrepreneur and you're trying to provide a service in this sector, you're going to have to realize that a critical bottleneck for you is going to be finding a way to working with the government, maybe the National Labour Agency or the Agency of Migration or Immigration for that sake, and finding a way of convincing them that what you're doing is actually helping their bigger picture. I think if you don't take that into consideration, you're very quickly going to run into a couple of bureaucratic walls, if you like.
And Just Arrived seems to have both had some advancements in terms of building those relationships, but also some challenges.
Yeah, I mean, I think Just Arrive did this really well from start, and they've made sure that they've received the official certification from those government agencies. So they are allowed to work with people coming from abroad in large numbers. I think it's always going to be a challenge going forward to maintaining that relationship and ensuring and explaining to, and perhaps even educating sometimes people on the government side as to the level of potential here. You know, there's a great potential for scalability, and that means that suddenly that we're talking about huge numbers of people being put into work, and that's going to have to be done with the cooperation of the government side.
So you guys have a couple of plays in the integration sphere. What's like the next thing? What box would you like to check in terms of solutions for integration?
I mean, personally, I'm a big fan of Andreas and Just Arrived, and by having been put on the board, I think LSV has a great opportunity to working with Just Arrived to put them at the center of a wider supply chain for integration. So I think what we're looking to do next, together with Just Arrived, is to see how can we build a bigger holistic model around integration that will involve a couple of other actors as well. So that might mean for us that we do further investments into our own portfolio, but also that we work strategically with Just Arrive to help them partner up with other actors on specific projects.
You've been listening to the Social Innovation Podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Please subscribe to this podcast on your favorite podcasting platform and share the episode you like with your friends. That's how we grow our audience. Thank you for listening. This podcast is edited by Stop Making Sense Productions. Until next time, this is your host, Henrik Storm-Dursen.